football on off the ball.
Toby, I'm just a bit standoffish, to be honest, and I just said that to the lads in the dressing room. We're getting too much respect. And for me, on a football pitch, when you give teams too much respect, it's a fear. Yeah, didn't like it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Run on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. You've got Wednesday night rugby coming your way from 7:30. Fiona Hayes is going to talk all things British and Irish Lions with us and also do a little bit of a look ahead to, let's call it, World Cup season on the women's front. Their first warm-up game happens this Saturday, so Fiona will break down some of the big storylines going into Ireland versus Scotland on Saturday as well. From 8 o'clock, we're going to have Shel Burns, Colin Barron and John Moore with us to chat about the challenges facing football academies. Football Families is a brilliant new documentary going out over the next 3 weeks on TV, and they both feature, episode one features heavily on the Shelburne boys' side of things, and both of the lads are involved, so looking forward to getting their insights from 8 o'clock. And then after 9 o'clock, we'll have the next episode of our Settle In series. Kathleen has recorded a brilliant chat with the Ireland women's record goal scorer Olivia O'Toole. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. Cameron Hill's News Round coming momentarily. Cameron, how are you doing?
Greetings, Owen.
And Nathan Murphy is here as well. How are you, Nathan?
I'm alright.
Ready for the weekend?
Oh, always, Owen. Always.
What is happening this weekend? Where are you off to?
I'm off to altogether now, Owen.
Oh, wow. They've lowered the minimum age, have they, or the maximum age this year, have they?
Oh, top bads, son. Top bads. Wow.
You do your bit on the gate and then you get a free ticket, isn't it?
Yeah.
I look at the steward having a great time.
Yeah. I haven't been to altogether now, but I know people who have, not just your cell phone, and I suspect the average age is going to be closer to my age than your age.
Why is that? Just because your friends are going this time?
Well, I think, does Electric Picnic not attract the maybe younger, former Oxygen / Witness crowd?
I think you flip those demographics now at this stage, don't you?
I think so, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. Has it flipped back?
Maybe. Maybe these things come full cycle.
No, yeah. Electric Picnic is very, we're the old guys on Electric Picnic.
We, as you and who
me,
else?
Me and you.
Me? Yes. I mean, as I said, I don't think you can be putting me into the same category as you just yet. Well, actually, forever. I mean, we'll always be the same distance of age.
We're going to have to spend a lot of time together this weekend, Owen, so let's not get off on a bad way.
What are you doing down there? What's your particular schedule?
Well, I'm sort of fairly chilled on Friday night.
Okay.
So I'm doing the crappy quiz, which you're presenting. So all I have to do is be a guest.
Mm-hmm.
So I can really fairly chill out all day. The last time we did a crappy quiz at a festival, you know, got fairly raucous and out of hand. And we had, last year at Electric Picnic, we had Brian Fenton and Kevin McManaman singing songs and Andy Lee. We did a live reenaction of Kevin McManaman's 2011 goal for Dublin.
Yes.
With the crowd involved.
Yeah.
It was quite spectacular.
Kicking from the flames.
Previous year, we had Roddy Collins up singing Mr. Brightside with some randomer from the crowd.
Right.
So you're in charge of it this year, so you've got a lot to live up to.
Yeah, clearly, clearly.
So I'm gonna do that, do a little bit of work, maybe have a relaxing glass of wine while working, and then go and watch Fontaines.
Nice. That sounds like an idyllic Friday.
Then go back and stay in the hotel.
Yeah.
I've got my
good night's sleep, and then get up, go to work again on Saturday. Altogether now. We've got a special League of Ireland panel with our friends in Rockshore. 3 o'clock if you're at Altogether now.
Who's on that?
Alan Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
Bohemians manager,
mm-hmm.
Brian Kerr, and Kieran McCormack.
Brian Kerr was one of the biggest attractions at Electric Picnic last year. It was astonishing. We just kind of let him off telling stories, packed out a tent at 12 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, there's a nervousness around these. Even when we have an off-the-ball roadshow and we've sold the tickets and you know people have bought them and it's sold out, you still have a nervousness of what if nobody turns up. At music festivals, you can multiply that by 1,000. Particularly, I worry about our crappy quiz. So if you're there, I'm hoping it maybe starts raining about 10 to 7 and people are looking for somewhere to hide out and they can come and watch us in the tent at 7 o'clock for the crappy quiz.
There's probably nothing more deflating than someone popping their head into a tent going, maybe not, and walking off. Like, that must be
there's nothing worse than a bad moment. I've had this moment at Electric Picnic where I've gone into a tent and there's nobody else in there and there's, somebody
you make eye
telling
contact
a story and you walk in and you're like, well, now I can't leave. This will be poor. So, please do come along. We're going to be there. Brian Kerr is going to be there Friday evening as well. He's going to be with Colm. He's going to do a special. You had to be there at 5 o'clock. Jerry's going to have a special panel right after the League of Ireland show, and you've got some stuff on Sunday as well. That's brave from you, Owen, I've got to say.
Why is that brave?
Well, waiting to Sunday to do your couple of shows, having had the Owen Sheehan special Friday, Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
No. Day two of the wedding.
Exactly. 5 to 7 p.m. on Sunday. Nice. I think that's a good slot.
Okay. And I can't wait. So you've been to All Together Now as a young person, as you're keen to point out.
Mm-hmm. Very, very.
You feel
good.
Like I'm going to be out of place?
No, not at all. Not at all. No, it's moved in your direction. I think it's fair to say.
He's called CMAT now. It's not CMAT. Yeah. Before you get into the weekend.
Yeah, we can go line by line on the lineup, and we can introduce you to some cool.
I want a repeat of last year, Electric Picnic, where you sort of bring me around on the Saturday night and introduce me to your favourite artists.
Yeah, that was good crack, wasn't it? The less said about that, probably the better. Like, the thing about Electric Picnic is that it's just so. It's sprawled so much at this point, and if you want to see artists away from the main lineup at headliner time, you just have the floor to yourself. Like, even when it came to Lancome last year at Electric Picnic, because they were on the same time as Calvin Harris, there wasn't a sinner there.
You went into Lancome at Lancome. Now it was about, I think Lancome were going on stage at 11:30 at night on the Saturday night, and we went in at about 11:20, and I mean, there was nobody there.
Yeah,
not another person. To the extent of they've obviously cancelled. Because these are a pretty successful, very popular band. And then they come on stage and there's like a couple of hundred people, and two songs in, there's about 5,000 people.
Mm. Oh yeah, it did expand a little bit. Going up against Calvin Harris, always a tricky task.
Well, very tricky.
We wandered past Calvin Harris, who I haven't been to see Calvin Harris previously. From what I could tell, was playing cover versions of other very average dance tunes, which was a bit weird.
Right, okay, I didn't...
Like, surely Calvin Harris has enough of a back catalogue himself, he can... Just do his own stuff.
Just mix it up. Keep
anyway,
guessing.
He's not us. Who else should I be seeing? Are you so hipster with this that you're like, well, obviously I won't be going to see Fontaines because I'll be going to see some cool band over on some smaller stage.
No, definitely I'll be at Fontaines. I don't know. You got to be there at Nelly Furtado. You know, you're talking about hipster acts. You got to go see Nelly Furtado.
No, Nelly Furtado's Sunday night. Too late for me.
Okay, that's a shame.
That is terrible news.
We will have more on this a little bit later on, and as I say, we'll be there from Friday evening, but all across the weekend, we'll be there at the Go Loud Lounge, which is in the spoken word area down near the house at the festival. So if you're there, definitely pop the head in.
House.
You know, the main estate that it's set at. So as I say, next couple of hours, very busy on the show. 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, really looking forward to this piece tonight. We are, I guess, doing a piece around academies in Ireland. That is what the piece will essentially become with Cullen Barron and John Moore. This is based off the back of Football Families, which is airing tomorrow night, episode 103.
On RT1 just after 10 o'clock. And yeah, Marie Crowe, who devised it, I think, looked at that Crystal Palace documentary that was on Channel 4 a few years ago about their academy and thought, well, what about doing one of these on an Irish academy? And obviously it's a very different proposition, because while people may come from similar backgrounds, and it's fascinating in this, the varying backgrounds that people come from that find themselves in a League of Ireland academy, obviously the resources that are available at a club like Shelburne compared to a club like Crystal Palace are a million miles apart. I'm going to be really interested to see what people's reaction to it is, and sort of ruthless nature of academy football, where you have coaches having to make really difficult decisions around 13, 14 year old kids as they step up through the levels, and not every player from the 14s goes to the 15s, from the 15s goes to the 16s, and every step of the way your hopes grow that maybe you're going to be the one who gets to go and play for the Shells first team or gets to go to England. And obviously for the vast majority it's just not the case. I think from watching the three episodes, it reflects very well on the Shells Academy. I think certainly they put their best foot forward in terms of their hearts being in the right place. But they are so hamstrung by the lack of time that they have with the players. And the other fascinating part of this is when it was recorded, which was towards the back end of last season. And it goes right the way through the younger players at the academy to the more senior players who are trying to break into the first team, which at the time is Damien Duff's first team. And Duff is very much a part of this and his views on the game, which... I think a lot of them, there'll be nothing new, I think, from the Damien Duff angle, but more just that idea that he constantly puts out there of, well, what is making it? Which is a question that comes up always when we see academy players. Well, if you make a League of Ireland academy team at under 14, there's a sense of you've made it. Whereas you know, it turns out if you're the best player in a League of Ireland under 19 academy team, you're far, far from making it.
There's a really interesting, I remember Rory Smith telling a story. He was walking in a park in Manchester with his wife, and they stumbled across an under-11s game and saw them playing kind of very expansive out-the-back football, very advanced kind of technical style. And she asked, how many of those players will make it? And he said, oh, absolutely none of them, because it's already too late. They're not playing for a big, they're not in an academy. They're not playing for a big underage side. Like, it's amazing, really, just how absolutely narrow the football pyramid is when you're trying to make it.
Yeah. We were chatting before we came on and about the Lions and how the academy structure in Ireland for rugby,
you mean St. Michael's,
has actually produced loads and loads of high quality players that end up representing the British and Irish Lions. Like, we were kind of chatting about someone like Thomas Clarkson, who can't get into the starting team for Leinster, will eventually be a starter for Leinster. There's no question in my mind about that. But such is the depth and the quality of player coming through the rugby academies here. Is it so fanciful to look at that and say football could possibly get into that sort of realm of success? All relative, obviously, but if funding was forthcoming, potentially the government could stump up a bit of cash eventually. There might actually be the people, the willpower and the talent in this country to make a better fist of this.
Well, there's many big differences between the football and rugby academy structures, but the main one is that the rugby academy structure is intrinsically connected to the education system, that it goes through the schools and then up into the universities. And even when you make the provincial academies, there's strong link-ins with the various universities and making sure that you're doing your degree alongside your career, that just isn't happening anywhere to the same extent in Irish football. There are link-ups between some of the better academies, such as Shamrock Rovers in particular and Shelburne, with various grind schools or schools in their localities, but it's not a part of your schooling. You have to essentially leave your traditional schooling to go into one of these football academies and dedicate your life to it with no guarantee of success at the end. Like, I think of in Conor Nyland's book when he's talking about the various challenges he faced, that one of the problems with elite youth sport is everybody has to put absolutely everything into it and sacrifice everything with no guarantee of the outcome at the end and who are the ones that are going to make it. And that's the biggest problem for football, whereas I think rugby is in a far better position, that if you don't make it, you are going to leave with a very strong education at the end of it. And there's a far greater priority put to that. But that's a route football has never really gone down. We obviously have UCD in the League of Ireland. Besides that, there doesn't seem to be that strong connection there. And maybe, again, it's because the academy, the real academy structure, I know you could look at the schools and Michaels and Blackrock, and, you know, the best players are obviously being identified at a young age before they're doing their leaving cert. But it's not till post-leaving cert that really they're moving into the academy structure, whereas when it comes to football, it's almost too late by the time you've done your leaving cert if you want, as you say, to go and make it in England. So I don't think it's a straightforward answer, but government funding is a big part of it. And that's why this is going to be particularly timely, because an audit's been ongoing of all of the academies over recent weeks. The results of that will be forthcoming, and then the presentation will go back in front of government for funding in the next budget for the sort of 7-8 million a year they ultimately hope to get to for academy funding in Irish football, which, remember, will just be running to stand still. So, because everybody's investing, like everybody around Europe is investing in football heavily at the moment. So I think there's a lot of lessons football could definitely learn from rugby. And maybe it will end up going that way to a certain extent, whereby obviously rugby, it's centered around, you know, probably half a dozen schools are producing the vast majority of players for provincial and international teams. We probably are going to end up with a scenario where half a dozen clubs are going to end up providing all of the players. And that's probably what will come out of this audit, that while at the moment we have academies everywhere and associated with every League of Ireland club, and not just League of Ireland clubs, with certain centres around the country, that the best will start to get most of the funding. Yeah. And if that's already happening when you look at the makeup of the underage teams and the players coming through from Rovers and Pats and Shells dominating those teams.
Yeah, and you say half a dozen, it could well be three even.
I mean, it could. I think like Cork, there, you know, Cork are doing things at underage level, Galway are doing things at underage level, but there are still massive parts of the country that are totally underserved, and it looks like they're going to remain underserved.
Yeah. Right, let's do a couple of stories. The news round is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. You are starting with Shelburne, Cameron.
Yes, and it's to the Europa League they go after they were beaten 1-0 by Karabag in the second leg of their Champions League qualifier in Baku. John Martin's own goal just before the break meant the Reds go out to the Azerbaijani side 4-0 on aggregate. Vessel Spiel made his debut in goals for the Reds tonight and saved a penalty, so a good start to his life at Talca Park. Now, Joey O'Brien's side will now drop down, as I said, to the Europa League qualifiers, where they'll face the loser of tonight's clash between Ludogorets of Bulgaria and Croatian side Rijeka.
Ludogorets are 1-0 up coming up to half-time in that game. I've never heard of Rijeka, Nathan, but they managed to hold Ludogorets to a 0-0 draw in the first leg. So Ludogorets have taken the lead in that tie. That's probably good news for them.
Yeah,
for Shelburne,
I mean. Croatian side, and probably, as you say, not the most famous club, but do have a European pedigree, and I think it qualified for the Europa League group stage at one stage recently. Right. And certainly, again, would be favourites for that. But the one benefit maybe for the Croatian side is that their away supporters are banned from travelling, and it may give Shells the opportunity to play at Talca Park. The expectation is they're going to have to play all the rest of their games now in Tala. But I know last week they were hopeful that if it was the Croatian side, that maybe because there'll be no away fans there, they might be allowed to host it in Talca Park. And if you think of what Shamrock Rovers did last year, they got through to the Conference League ultimately because they won at this stage, the Europa League qualifier, they beat Celje. So this is the opportunity if you win this tie. And I think they'll be really happy with tonight. They made 8 changes. They've got a league game coming up at the weekend against Sligo. Straight into that European game. They got Bowls then next weekend. Another European game. It's an incredibly condensed calendar. So to make that many changes, you sort of worried after last week that you could get an almighty battering over there. Actually, to get away with that result, I think, means everybody's confidence remains intact. But it's still going to be a very, very difficult game.
The Women's Champions League, meanwhile.
Yeah, Athlone setting off in their first ever Champions League campaign this evening. The Women's Premier Division champions taking on Cardiff City in their first round semi-final in Lissy-Wallen. The winner will then take on Croatian side ZNK Agram in the final in Athlone on Saturday. Manager Colin Fortune says a first European tie in 42 years is massive for Athlone.
It's massive for us. It really is. You know, the atmosphere around Athlone at the minute is really, really electric. You know, every person you meet in the street is talking about this Champions League game. You know, the opportunity for us again to host the Champions League game. It's, what is it, 83 since we hosted Standard Liège last. You know, that's a long, long time for a club like Athlone. I know in recent history Athlone hasn't been in a good place, but, you know, the women's team have been in a good place. They've been very, very good. And, you know, this is massive for our club. It's massive for the community. Massive for football people of Athlone, because Athlone Town is a football town. You know, something like this might just get people back on side, get people back supporting the club. I'm expecting a big, big crowd on Wednesday night. And, you know, the excitement, as I said, is great. And, you know, we're really excited for this game. And, you know, fair use to our owners, to our new ownership, Nick Giannotti, for hosting this game, because he put the shoulder to the wheel to get to host this. And, you know, we're delighted, and it does a lot for Athlone.
That kicks off this evening at 7:30.
We have some transfer news then.
Yeah, Luis Diaz has stated that his goal is to win every possible title with new club Bayern Munich. The Colombian sealing his move from Liverpool in a deal worth €75 million, while Sunderland have completed the signing of former Arsenal captain Granit Xhaka from Bayer Leverkusen.
Who is winning the transfer window, Nathan?
I think you'd say right now Liverpool, though Arsenal wouldn't be far behind him. It's insane what's going on at the moment. Every time you go online, something ridiculous is happening. Like, I see Atalanta are trying to buy Jean-Philippe Mateta from Crystal Palace. Benjamin Sesko was due to go to Newcastle, but now Manchester United are coming in to hijack it. And Newcastle are looking around and thinking, well, maybe we can get Ollie Watkins if Manchester United aren't interested in Ollie Watkins. One thing that seems clear is that conversation we had throughout last season of that middle third been stronger than ever before in the Premier League. It feels as though that's been gutted during this transfer window, that all of those players, particularly if you see a Mateta leaving Crystal Palace, it looks as though Eberechi Eze will probably ultimately end up at Arsenal as well. And suddenly they've had an outstanding transfer window. What's happened, Brentford with Mbeumo, looks like Vissa is going to go to Newcastle. And it has to be a reaction to what teams have learned from the first season of the Champions League and the extra games and the money that's available in the Champions League, that these clubs are adding massive depth, almost always all doing what Chelsea did and just stockpiling your squad with as much talent as possible. So how that develops next year, and does it mean that, you know, it's a sort of runaway top four, top five potentially, because it does look as though a lot of those teams are going to have to regroup.
Who's going to be paying Alexander Isak's wages in a month's time?
Oh, Liverpool. I don't think there's any question that he's going to end up at Liverpool. I think once this Luis Diaz deal was done, even like that Liverpool team is going to look so different next season. Like Luis Diaz, first sort of 5-6 weeks of last season was probably Liverpool's best player, most important player. He's the one who got them up and running. Has been a sort of 8.5, 9 out of 10 type player, it's felt like, for Liverpool over the last couple of years. But maybe not a player who's going to win you a Champions League. And I think that's what they're looking at here, that, yeah, he's good, but he's probably a ceiling, and he's probably reached that ceiling at Liverpool, and they're able to sell him for a massive profit, having got some very good years out of him, and are replacing him with an enormous amount of attacking talent. It's hard to figure out how Liverpool are going to line up next season with Ekitike, Isak, Wirtz, you know, potentially Rodrigo coming in as well, Mo Salah still there. But the one thing it does do for Liverpool as well is give some breathing space this time next year around Mo Salah, that if there's speculation come the end of the season of him going to Saudi or going somewhere else, I think Liverpool supporters will be a lot more relaxed than they were 3-4 months ago. Were you happy with Arsenal?
Had they been told that Alexander Isak wanted to leave at the start of the summer, would they have gone about their business in a different manner? I'm not saying I don't think they would have beaten Liverpool to the chase to get Isak, but I think Isak would have suddenly become transfer target number one days after Gyökeres signs for the club. It then becomes apparent that Isak wants to leave. And I think it's obvious who the best potential striker is now available to Premier League clubs, and that is Isak. He is a better signing than Gyökeres will be, than Sesko will be, because of the experience in the league and the known quantity about it.
We've loads of time to talk about it, but the one question about Liverpool is, does all of this somehow upset what they did last season, which was a very good team elevated by an otherworldly talent in Mo Salah? And what's Mo Salah thinking looking at these guys coming in? Is he going, great, when I'm passing the ball across, it's not Darwin Nunez there anymore sliding in? Yeah. Or is he going, wait a second, there's only room for one superstar on this team?
We should get a couple of more stories done. Cameron, what's next?
Well, Ireland's FIFA wafer is in a race to be fit for next month's Rugby World Cup in England. The back rower missed the final game of their Six Nations campaign with a knee injury and won't play a part in their upcoming warm-up games against Scotland this weekend and Canada next weekend. Scott Beaman's side will already be without key forwards Aaron King and Dorothy Wall for the tournament after they suffered long-term injuries. Scrum coach Dennis Fogarty says they're closely monitoring wafer's progress in recovery.
She's got a procedure done, so she's definitely not ruled out of the World Cup yet, but we're taking it week by week in terms of when her return to play is, but she's not ruled out of the World Cup anyway. There's no doubt about it, losing key players like that has been difficult, but look, that's the nature of the game and of sport. We've had obviously Sam coming back in, which is a big addition for us. And there's been other girls coming through that have really impressed us throughout the camp as well. But, you know, like I said, with injuries like that, they're always going to come. They're not ideal going into a World Cup, but it's something we have to deal and probably adapt with as well, and that's what we've done over the last couple of weeks.
To Gaelic Games then, and Roscommon great Donie Smith has announced his retirement from intercounty football today. The Boyle native made 133 appearances for the Rossies and helped the county to 2 Connacht titles in 2017 and 2019. In a statement, Roscommon County Chair Brian Carroll praised the former captain for showing great honesty and pride when lining out for the side. Rashid Adeleke will miss this weekend's National Track and Field Championships in Santry. Athletics Ireland confirming today she is instead focusing on recovery ahead of the World Championships in Tokyo this September. It means that the Tallaght sprinter won't defend her 100 metres title at Morton Stadium. And finishing on the swimming today, Ellen Walsh swam a new national record as she qualified for the final of the 200 metre butterfly at the World Aquatics Championships in Singapore earlier. She was third in her semi-final and qualifies fourth fastest in a time of 2 minutes 7.48 seconds. She'll be with Olympic champions Summer McIntosh and Paris silver medalist Regan Smith in tomorrow afternoon's final, while Daniel Whitt Finnefin surrendered the first of his world titles, coming home last in his final of the 800 metres freestyle, while Danielle Hill was seventh in her 50 metre backstroke semi-final and 12th overall, so she won't advance.
Cameron Hill, thank you for tonight's news round. Nathan, thank you. You'll be back with us after 8 o'clock for a piece on Shelburne's Academy. We're going to be talking to Fiona Hayes next for Wednesday Night Rugby.